Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
There are nights you never outrun. Nights that stay with you no matter how many years pass, replaying themselves in the dark when you least expect it. For Jen, Sarah, and the man who was with them that spring, the night came. At the end of April 2008, a Wednesday, a night that began in silence, in ordinary sleep, and ended in screams, shadows, and a hospital resuscitation room. But to understand what happened, you have to know a little about Jen. Jen owned the house. She'd been living there for close to 2 years. It was nothing extravagant, but it was hers, and she was proud of that fact. Jen worked a good job, made decent money, and had decided to pay her mortgage down faster than most would dare. But life had caught up to her. An injury had forced her out of work, leaving her living on compensation that barely kept things afloat. Bills loomed. The future looked uncertain, and Jen worried about her body, her money, her life, constantly. She was the kind of person who didn't let herself sit still. If she wasn't working, she was exercising, pushing herself hard, sometimes harder than she should. People close to her saw it, the raw energy, the anxiety bubbling beneath the surface, and yet they loved her. She was kind, generous, just carrying more weight than anyone should have to. Her family was Ukrainian, and sometimes they went back, trips to the old country, to connect with roots and relatives. But one of those trips left Jen with something no one could have anticipated. She came back with a spirit, the spirit of a little girl. Not a campfire story, not a joke. A real presence, Jen said she had seen, in dreams at first, over and over again. A small girl, thin, pale, with the hollowed-out look of someone who had starved. A child who looked to have died in the famine of the 1930s, the Holodomor, Stalin's man-made famine that left millions of Ukrainians dead. History books describe it as numbers, but to Jen, it was a face. At first, the little girl never frightened her. She would appear in Jen's dreams calmly, silent, watchful. There was never malice, never cruelty, just a kind of quiet presence that, over time, almost became familiar. But then things changed. The girl began to appear not just in dreams. Jen swore she had materialized in the house, not in her own body, but wearing the face and form of her friend Sarah. And then came Wednesday night. Sarah's boyfriend was staying over. The two of them went to bed around 10 p.m. in her basement room. Everything was ordinary, quiet, until 12:30 a.m. That's when the screaming started. Sarah! Sarah! It was Jen's voice, shrill and frantic, echoing through the house. Sarah threw on a robe and rushed into the hall, her boyfriend following. There on the landing was Jen, collapsed on the floor, rocking back and forth like a child caught in a nightmare. She was muttering to herself, the words spilling out over and over. I don't know. I don't know. They tried to calm her, tried to understand what she was saying, but the words kept changing. Sometimes ice, 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 then thaw, thaw, thaw. It didn't make sense, not at first. But as they pressed her, piecing together the fragments, a picture started to form. I don't know meant she didn't understand why it was happening, why she had seen what she had seen. Ice meant she was cold, not just chilly, but freezing from the inside out. And thaw? That referred to the Bible she had grabbed from her nightstand, clutching it tight against her stomach. She said that when she pressed it there, she felt warmth flood through her. She felt herself thawing from the inside. Only then could she begin to explain. Jen hadn't been able to sleep. She lay awake for a half hour, her mind running circles. And then, in the darkness, something changed. The air in her room shifted. She felt a heaviness settle, an unmistakable evil pressing in on her. She opened her eyes. 5 shadowy figures stood beside her bed. They were small and about 4 feet tall. I mean, the order of their presence was enormous. They weren't featureless shadows either. Their eyes gleamed. Their mouths were filled with sharp, jagged white teeth. And above them, floating, was the little girl, the famine child. Her expression was not calm, not neutral. It was unhappy. And she wasn't looking at Jen. She was looking at the shadows. Jen froze, crouching back against her headboard. The figures edged closer, and then the girl moved. She raised her arm, waved it in a sweeping motion outside to inside. In that instant, Jen was thrown, not stumbled, not slipped, thrown. The force sent her off the bed and onto the floor. Terrified, she bolted from the room, down the hall, fumbling with her phone as she ran. She called her sister, but when her sister picked up, she said she didn't recognize the voice on the other end. Jen's words came out in a panic, distorted, almost inhuman. She tried to run a bath to calm herself, but collapsed before she could get in. Crawling, gasping, she dragged herself toward the staircase, then down the steps, screaming Sarah's name as she went. That's where Sarah and her boyfriend found her, rocking, trembling, repeating her phrases like broken glass. Ice, thaw, I don't know. And the night had only just begun. They managed to get Jen calm just enough to stand, but she was still trembling, her words fractured, her breathing wrong. Every time she pulled in air, she seemed to forget how to let it go. She'd inhale, hold, and hold until her body forced her into a brief blackout. 10 seconds, 15 seconds, gone. Then she'd jolt back, gasping, only for the cycle to repeat. It didn't take long to realize this was dangerous. Sarah tried convincing her to call an ambulance, but Jen shook her head, wild-eyed, refusing. The thought of strangers staring at her, judging her as unstable or crazy, was unbearable. "No ambulance," she pleaded. "No ambulance." So they drove her themselves. The hospital wasn't far, but every mile stretched tight with dread. In the passenger seat, Jen slumped forward, shuddering, clutching her Bible like it was fused to her chest. Her lips moved in whispers no one could quite make out. Her eyes stayed fixed on the dashboard, unfocused, distant. Sarah kept glancing over, her knuckles white on the steering wheel, terrified that if she blinked, Jen might stop breathing altogether. By the time they reached the ER, the waiting room was nearly empty. A handful of people half asleep under fluorescent light. They checked Jen in quickly and found a spot off to the side, away from curious eyes. Even now, Jen shook her head when the idea of a stretcher was raised. Number. Not in front of people. She didn't want them thinking she was crazy. They sat with her, trying to steady her breathing, but it only worsened. The pauses between exhalations stretched longer. Her body stiffened. Then, after half an hour of this, her eyes rolled back into her head. Jen slumped over, unresponsive. The staff moved instantly. Security cleared a path. Nurses wheeled her into the resuscitation room. Sarah clutched her hand, refusing to let go, while monitors beeped, syringes clicked, voices barked orders. Her body was alive, but she wasn't there. They pinched her arms, pressed hard against her sternum. Nothing, no reaction. Jen wasn't responding to touch, to pain, to voices, and yet she wasn't gone. Her chest rose and fell, shallow but steady. She was suspended in a place no one in the room could name. Sarah had a final exam the next morning, and after hours by Jen's bedside, she couldn't stay any longer. With reluctance, she left to gather herself, leaving her boyfriend to sit with Jen through the night. He pulled a chair close to her bed and watched, and what he saw unnerved him. Jen's eyes would drift upward, tracking something on the ceiling. They'd fix there for long seconds, then move as if following something across the room. She wasn't looking at him. She wasn't looking at the doctors. She was looking at something no one else could see. She fidgeted constantly, tugging at her hair tie, pulling out her nasal tube, shifting her hands restlessly, but she never looked into his eyes. He said her name again and again, leaned close, put his face in front of hers. Nothing. And then, a stir. When Sarah's name was mentioned, when her mother's name was whispered, Jen twitched. Not fully awake, but reacting in some subtle, buried way, like the words were stirring something in her. But it wasn't enough. For 2 hours, she drifted like this, suspended, breathing shallowly, eyes scanning something invisible above. And then something remarkable happened. Her boyfriend leaned close, speaking not in English this time, but in Ukrainian. He told her simple words, God sees you. He sees everything. God is here. That's all it took. Jen's eyes fluttered, blinked. Slowly, heavily, they focused. For the first time in hours, she was back. It wasn't instant clarity. She didn't sit up, laughing, declaring herself healed. She blinked, stirred, pulled herself gradually back into the room like a diver surfacing after being far too long under. But she was there, alive, present, awake. And yet the question hung heavy. What exactly had happened? The doctors wrote it off as a physiological reaction. They diagnosed her with an anxiety condition, not a standard panic attack, but something rarer. Her body didn't hyperventilate the way most do. Instead, it shut itself down. The diagnosis was clinical, logical, safe. Anxiety can cripple the body in terrifying ways, they explained. Jen's body simply overreacted to fear. But that explanation didn't sit right. What about the five shadow figures? The jagged teeth, the little girl who hovered above the bed, the one who had lived in Jen's dreams for years? What about the unseen force that had thrown her to the floor? And what about the way her Bible had warmed her from the inside? Not figuratively, not spiritually, but literally. Heat blooming in her stomach when she pressed the book to her body. There were too many questions science had no room for. And then there was the Ukrainian. Why was it that English, pleading words, even the sound of her own name couldn't rouse her? Why was it that pain tests and medical instruments had no effect? But a single sentence in her ancestral language, a sentence about God, could pull her out instantly. Was it neurological? The mind reacting to the comfort of a mother tongue? Or was it something else? Something far older, tied to the same route that had carried the little famine girl across the ocean decades earlier? No one in the room could say for sure. By morning, Jen was stable, exhausted, shaken, but alive. She refused to talk about the figures again. She wouldn't answer questions about the girl. The only thing she admitted was that her body had betrayed her, and that she couldn't let fear take hold like that again. Still, for Sarah and her boyfriend, the memory was carved into stone. They had heard Jen's screams. They had seen the terror in her eyes. They had felt her icy skin, seen her collapse, watched her drift into some other state of being, and witnessed her come back at the sound of God's name spoken in the language of her ancestors. They couldn't forget. And beneath the clinical diagnosis, beneath the soothing explanations about anxiety and panic, darker questions lingered. What had really happened in Jen's room? By dawn, Jen was back in her own home, exhausted, pale. She hadn't slept, only dozed in fragments on the couch, the Bible still clutched close like an anchor. The hospital discharged her with a tiny medical label, but labels can't hold the whole story. Sarah sat with her for most of that morning, quietly watching her friend fidget, sip tea, stare at walls that suddenly seemed to hum with memory. She wanted to believe the doctors. She wanted to believe that this was just anxiety, that Jen's body, under the weight of stress and fear, had simply overreacted. That the shadows and the little girl were hallucinations conjured by exhaustion. That the screams, the collapse, the strange, unresponsive state, all of it had a neat medical file somewhere, stamped and solved, but she couldn't quite silence what she'd seen. Because she had heard Jen scream her name with a terror no dream could fake. She had seen her gasping, her eyes rolling back. She had sat in that hospital room and watched as nothing worked until words in Ukrainian summoned her back. And Jen herself? She didn't want to talk about it. She didn't deny it outright, not to Sarah, not to her boyfriend. But she closed down when questions pressed too close. She didn't want to describe the five shadows again. She didn't want to talk about the little girl's expression, the sweep of her arm, the way she'd been flung from her bed as if by invisible hands. And so silence settled in, heavy and deliberate. But silence doesn't erase questions. Why, for instance, would the little girl, the same figure that had lived in Jen's dreams peacefully for years, suddenly turn violent? Why would she wave her arm and throw Jen from her bed? If she'd come from famine, if she was some orphaned remnant of history, wasn't she meant to be pitied, even protected? Or had Jen misread her all along? That was the fear that crept in like a draft. What if the child wasn't a child at all? What if she had only ever been a mask, a disguise for something darker that had attached itself during that trip to Ukraine, wearing the sorrowful face of a starving girl? Because who would question it? Who wouldn't open their arms to such a tragic figure? And then there were the shadow people, five of them, small, teeth bared, eyes glinting. Were they part of the girl's story, or were they something else entirely? Did they come for Jen that night, drawn by her fear, her exhaustion, her unraveling nerves? If they had found her once, could they find her again? And if so, how soon? The Bible warming her stomach raised questions, too. That detail haunted Sarah most of all. Not metaphorical warmth, not comfort, actual heat radiating out from the inside as if something unseen had lit a fire in her body. Jen swore it had thawed her. How do you explain that away? And what about the language? Why would English, her daily tongue, fall flat while Ukrainian woke her? Why would the phrase, God sees you, he sees everything, God is here, cut through when nothing else could? There are answers depending on who you ask. A neurologist might say the mother tongue taps into primal circuits of memory, safety, and belonging. A priest might say the language of ancestors holds unique spiritual weight, a tether to the divine. And some might argue it was less about the words themselves and more about the intent behind them, the act of calling on God at the moment she teetered between two worlds. But none of those explanations erase the fact that she came back at those words, and not before. Afterward, friends urged her toward therapy. They said stress had stacked too high, that she needed help unpacking the repressed pain in her life before it crushed her again. And maybe they were right. Therapy could help her breathe, could help her body stop betraying her. But therapy couldn't answer the darker questions. What if this wasn't just stress? What if Jen really had been in the presence of spirits? What if her body didn't just overreact but responded to something she wasn't equipped to face? What if what they witnessed that night wasn't panic at all, but possession? That possibility sat like a stone in Sarah's chest. She and her boyfriend didn't talk about it openly, not often, but they both thought it. Because when you've seen someone stare past you at something invisible on the ceiling, when you've seen them collapse, convulse, and drift into a place beyond reach, when you've watched them come back at the invocation of God, it's hard not to wonder if you've brushed against the edges of something demonic. And then there was the practical fear. What if the shadows return? Once something knows where you sleep, it's hard to believe it'll simply move on. Once it knows how you react and the way your body locks, the way your breath falters, the way your soul trembles, what's to stop it from coming back for more? Jen never had an answer for that. None of them did. Life moved on. Jen went to appointments. Sarah went back to school. Her boyfriend tried to frame the story in a way that didn't make him sound crazy, but privately, they carried it like a hidden scar. Because no matter how many podcasts you listen to, no matter how many books you read about shadow people, poltergeists, or demons, nothing prepares you for watching it unfold in front of you. Nothing prepares you for the sound of a friend screaming your name in the middle of the night, for the sight of her body crumpled on the floor, for the moment when a phrase in another language pulls her back from whatever void had taken her. Those things live with you. And when you go to bed at night, when you close your eyes and tell yourself it was just stress, just anxiety, just the mind playing tricks, you can't help but feel the dark weight of another possibility pressing down on you. That maybe the famine girl was never a girl, that maybe the shadows weren't passing through but watching, waiting. And that maybe the night of April 30th, 2008 wasn't an ending at all, but a beginning.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.